You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
If you enter my mind for any reason, I will twist your head off and use it for a chamber pot. Are you going to arrest me, Garibaldi?
No way. I want to live to see the future.
Mr. Bonova, Mr. Self, anybody else? Shoot him.
We are star stuff. We are the universe made manifest, trying to figure itself out.
All of this was for nothing. Unless we go to the stars.
Boom. Sooner or later. Boom!
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic Babylon 5. This week, Season 1, Episode 14, Grail. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis for this episode? A man comes to Babylon 5. They always do that, don't they? There's always a man coming to Babylon 5 every week.
Yep.
Every week. Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah. Every man. A man comes to Babylon 5 asking the alien ambassadors for information that can help him with his quest to find the Holy Grail. While a down below gangster gives security problems by mind wiping all who oppose him. This episode was written by JMS and Christy Marks and was directed by Richard Compton. This episode was released on the 6th of July 1994 and takes place in July 2258. And this week's guest stars, William Sanderson as Juice, Tom Booker as Jinxo, Tim Norton as Ombuds Wellington, Linda Lodge as Miriam Running Deer, John C. Flynn III as John Flynn, and the great David Warner as Aldous Gaddich. So guys, what do we think about this episode?
Well, I gotta say, this episode has my favorite vignette or scene from the entire series. I've been waiting for it. I couldn't remember which episode it was from, but it's the court case at the beginning where the redneck is accusing the gray alien of kidnapping his grandfather. And when I saw this originally 25 odd years ago, I was like, that's amazing. No sci-fi series have ever done that before with the typical gray alien. And it was just great, and it made me smile, and I was like, all right, I'm settled in for the ride here. Let's go.
Yeah, I did like that. I like that a lot. And John Flynn, who was the guy who was the redneck, was actually the director of photography for Babylon 5. And he plays the man in the courtroom at the beginning of the episode. So they just dragged in the director of photography for a quick scene and then obviously got back on to do his work. But yeah, it was a clever scene. I liked it. So his grandparents kidnapped my grandparents. We want damages.
Get a job. Yeah, we want damages and reparations. And it's just the fact that it sits there and it just raises up a drawing that has literally nothing to do with the subject. It's like, can we get a translator in here?
Yes, it's hilarious. Just a great little scene.
It is, and I like Jim Norton's Ombuds Wellington. I thought he was going to be really. It was going to be like almost a comedy episode at the start of this, because he came out with a little quip there about, why doesn't it happen to the other ombuds? It happens to me. Nice little bit of comedy there. And I thought, oh, right, okay, we're going to see a bit more of this guy, and he's going to be one of these, he's going to be, a little comedy insert. And we don't see him again for a bit. So.
So his last name's Wellington. Is his first name Len, by any chance? Maybe Len Brennan, or maybe he's related to a bishop or something.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Dan. No, he's lost me as well.
Father Ted? No? No, oh, Jim Norton? Don't call me Len, you little... And I'm not going to finish the sentence.
Right. I have seen it, but I am not well-versed in it.
Fair that enough, right fair there enough. is a British reference that we
can't, oh, yes,
don't get.
Some British I don't apologize. Get either.
Yeah, I apologize. I apologize. No, Father Ted, just when the moment I saw him on the screen, it was like, oh my God, it's Bishop Brennan. We're going to kick him up the arse.
I'd forgotten. Sorry, I had forgotten about that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. There we go. But anyway, sorry. It took me a bit out of the episode seeing him in it because his face is sort of seared into my memory as Bishop Brennan, who is like the crotchety old bishop who is always offended and always angry. And to see him in the, kind of this comedy role at the beginning, and he's actually quite likable, it kind of threw me a little bit watching the episode. It's no fault of the episode. It just sort of took me out of it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I must admit, I didn't recognise him, having not seen Father Ted around the time it came out. I've only seen it in the last couple of years or so, and I've watched it, and then that was it, gone. I do need to watch it again, though, because it's absolutely brilliant. But no, I didn't recognise him from that. So what do we think about the cold opening then with Kosh, or what we are led to believe is Kosh?
It threw me for a loop for a minute. I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense. I don't recall this. And it's the same kind of appendage that Londo had when he was playing the card game. And he was, have we seen that episode yet? Or is that coming up where he's cheating at cards and somebody places a cold drink on it and he's, oh, maybe that's coming up. Okay.
It's coming up. I haven't seen that yet. I know what you mean. Okay. Though.
Yeah. Yes. It's the same kind of appendage, and it makes sense because it's from the Centauri system. So the fact that they would both have the same kind of weird thing
tentacle
does make
thing.
Sense. Yeah. Tentacle thing. Mm. But yeah, I was like, that can't be Kosh. That doesn't make any sense. But I couldn't remember what the actual story was.
I appreciated the physical practical effect. That I know we get CGI in the episode, but I appreciated that it was a physical tendril that you could kind of see, and it was quivering and it had kind of like a motion to it. And I appreciated that. And as Paul has been the guest on the episode over on my podcast, we were talking about a very unusual alien that was all CGI, and it kind of took us out the episode because the CGI sort of ruined it. And we kind of hoped that it had been a bit more practical effect. And it was quite nice to see that they'd done that with this episode. Perhaps budgets work that way.
You have a different podcast other than the Epsilon 3?
You've been moonlighting?
I podcast around. That's it.
What's it called?
It's the Temple Trek podcast. I don't know if anyone's heard of it, but there we go. It was an Enterprise episode, Vox Solar, or Voxel Corsa, I think we ended up calling it because we didn't know how to pronounce it. But the alien in that was all CGI, but we were kind of hoping for a practical effect. This was a bit of both, and I think it worked better that way.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think for the close-up shots, the puppetry, if you like, that was good. And it worked as well. It you couldn't see any strings or anything on it. It was obviously directed by one of those long pole things that is flexible. But then obviously when it jumps out, they use the CGI. It's a bit weird.
The CGI was a bit janky, but that was 1994, so we'll give it a pass. Yeah. It wasn't horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I looked at it and my first thought was...
not the right color.
Yeah, it's War of the Worlds is what I was thinking. I thought, what?
Yeah, that's
it. Yeah.
Got my mind in a bit of a spin because I'm still thinking about the last episode I saw, and not the one I should be talking about.
How Delenn tells Sinclair that there's an honored seeker coming, and why aren't you in your dress uniform?
Yes, that's right. Obviously, he's not aware of this person coming on board, and that's Gaich himself. Eldest Gaich. He has kept it quiet and didn't obviously want to bother the commander because he's looking for something that everybody considers ridiculous, obviously. I mean, the Holy Grail, I mean, of all the things to become looking for. When I first saw this episode, I thought, oh, here we go. We're talking about the Holy Grail again. Everybody's always looking for this Holy Grail, and now they're looking in space for it, for goodness sake. Why would you look for it in space?
Well, we looked everywhere on Earth and it's not there.
Yeah, they haven't looked behind the sofa. Or down the side of the sofa.
It's in a French castle somewhere. They've got one. It's very nice. Another reference. There we go. British references all around. Monty Python. There we go.
Very good.
Yeah, it's a bit weird bringing in the Holy Grail. We've already had so many kind of religious episodes already, which are about alien cultures, and it's an unusual belief system. To bring in something so human and antiquated, it felt weird bringing it into the show. Yeah, bringing something like the Grail in was a bit strange. If they just made it up as, you know, flubberderberjerber of rubberderb, you know, they made up a word and it's like a new part of human religions that have only just come up for the last century. And it was something that we weren't familiar with. I think it, I don't know, it would have had a bit more Babylon 5-ishness about it. But because it's so ancient and it's an old part of our mythology, which is kind of, you know, not taken seriously, just as Sinclair and Garibaldi do at the beginning of the episode. Again, it kind of took me out of the episode. I didn't really see the point of it being brought up, especially considering it's called the Cup of Regeneration when we just had Deathwalker a few episodes ago. And we found out that if you want regeneration, you're going to have to do some really nasty stuff. And his Grail mission's probably not going to turn out the way he really wants it.
Oh, I see. And I saw it as the opposite. I thought, no, this is perfect because they're bringing in ancient history. All the ambassadors have no idea what he's talking about. And he's slow and quiet and deliberate. He's like an ascetic monk kind of thing. And he's a seeker. And of course, nothing is more revered by the Mambari than a seeker.
Very true. And yeah, the person who plays the seeker does elevate it for me. Like, if it had been any other actor, I don't think I would have taken it as seriously. But his performance and the actor involved, I think, makes it for the episode for me.
So you don't think the guy who played Jinxo should have been the first seeker and David Warner should have been Jinxo? You don't think that would have been a better...
No. Yeah, that wouldn't have worked.
Definitely not.
Jinxo was something else. Let's just say that he was something else. The actor,
his name is yeah. Thomas.
I'm Thomas.
Yeah,
gonna grin.
I mean, this episode is not good for naming people, is it? Let's call them their real names. Tom Booker plays Thomas Jinxo, whatever his surname was. Yeah, okay, and you know, John C. Flynn is John Flynn. Yeah. Some imagination.
Well, the other guy was Deuce.
Yeah.
Because he's a piece of crap.
Yeah. I'm so glad I wasn't the only one who thought that. It's like, why are they constantly calling him Deuce? It's just not right.
Yeah.
But he was an American villain. It breaks the tradition. The Brit is the hero, and yes, the American is the villain.
That's true.
I didn't look this up, but I think Deuce was on the Bob Newhart show or Newhart or one of those Newhart shows where he was either Larry or Brother Daryl.
Right.
I don't know if you guys got that show over there. This is, I'm Daryl and this is my brother Larry. No, how would it go? It's something like, I'm Larry and this is my brother Daryl and this is my other brother Daryl. That guy, anyway.
Right.
You don't get that reference.
No, we did.
Now
we...
it's my turn.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly. Right.
No, I know. I've heard of the Newhart show. I know Bob Newhart, but we never watched it over here. So, no.
Right. And that's from 30-odd years ago, too. So mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly either.
Shut up. I was 20. I should know these things. and it was set before then as well. David Warner comes on. And my first thought was, oh, somebody's looking for the Holy Grail, and they're dressed with robes. He's got a staff. I mean, I thought it was a bit funny when he first appears, and Linnea goes, ah, that's him there. And they say, how do you know it's him? The guy's got a staff and he's wearing a cloak and he's a seeker. Let me think.
There's a guy behind him with two halves of a coconut going as they're coming onto Babylon.
Oh, dear. Yeah,
I mean, David Warner, what else can you say? I mean, when he delivers the whole monologue about why he became the seeker, how he got it and how it was handed on to him, he was the last of his kind, and how he'd lost his family on Mars, and the numbers add up. Just in any other actor's hands, I don't think I would have been sold on it. But his delivery, his calmness, the way he approached the character, absolutely brilliant. David Warner, obviously, throughout Trek as well. I mean, this comes into our Trek connections, but he's Mr. Trek, he's Mr. Sci-Fi for me, Tron as well. You know, he brought me into this episode where, you know, other things may have taken me out.
He's also done Doctor Who as well. So he's one of the very few that have actually appeared in...
Has he ever done Star Wars? A voice or anything?
I don't know. I'd have to look that up. I don't want to say no in case I'm wrong.
I IMDb'd a bunch of people and... got some Star Trek connections and stuff, but I didn't write down all the other fringy sci-fi stuff.
I feel like it's a trick they've missed.
Yeah, I read, because I was reading about David Warner and I was, all the trivia on him. And when he was in the Star Trek episode as the Cardassian, Gulmaset.
Chain of command.
Yeah, one of the best.
There are four lights. You cannot hurt me.
He had 3 days' notice. He was asked if he could do it as a replacement. He said yes, and every line is from a cue card. Because he couldn't, he just did not have the time to commit it to memory. So every time you see him looking, he's looking over Patrick Stewart's shoulder. But like you say, yes, you would not know it.
No.
So it's
what a legend! What a professional!
Given time, he would know every line. He wouldn't know. He wouldn't need cue cards at all, as was seen in that, like you said, Dan, in that speech he gave about how he became the Seeker. It's all in one take, or pretty much in one take. It's a long speech, and classical actors like that are trained to learn long speeches like that. So, that was nothing for him. It was easy. The only thing that was slightly odd is when. He obviously takes Jinxo on as his ward, if you like, which, okay, you can understand that character would do that, and he wants to help him become a better person. At the end of it, it all works. But then halfway through, they're walking through the corridors, and he gets jumped. The next minute, the staff comes out, bam, 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 bam. these two guys are on the floor, but it's filmed from behind, so you can see David Warner. It's not David Warner. It's too agile. David Warner's walking
around
with
a staff. Taller.
What's going on? He can't be much more taller. He's tall as it is. It's a bit weird. It didn't look like him at all. Too athletic. He wasn't that old. I mean, I'm trying to think. He's about the same age as my dad. So 94, he would have been about 50 odd or somewhere around there. Those 50-year-olds, we're not, that sort of old and rickety. We can move around a bit. He can do his own stunts, I'm sure.
Good to see him in a same scene with Mullary when they were doing the comedy, another comedy beat in the episode where it was Mullary was completely freaked out by this Nakaline feeder. He locks himself away, but then the Seeker comes to see him to get information that might lead to the Grail. And he's desperately trying to sell the information, but Vera's already gathered it together, put it in the crystal, and is giving it to them for free. And it's like, we are going to be put out of a business because of people like you.
Yes.
And it's just that calm delivery where David Warner was just sort of saying, I think we better leave. And then Mullary says, I think so too. And he just moves them on. So good. So good.
Yes. What are you doing?
I'm being efficient, sir.
A few more like you, Veer, and the entire Centauri Republic will efficient itself to extinction.
I think we should leave now.
What a wonderful idea. Please.
Thank you for your time, Ambassador.
Yeah, great scene.
So good.
So I mentioned just before we started recording that I've been talking to my dad about this. Mm-hmm. He's been watching this for the first time. He's never seen it before. And he's a science fiction fan. He likes this sort of thing. So I asked him how he was getting on with it. He's seen pretty much most of the first season. And he said, overall, it's good. And then he started saying things like, the characters are not quite there yet. And he says, some of them are, you can see that the acting isn't quite, quite right yet. I was thinking, who on earth is he on about? As far as I was concerned, they all hit the ground running. He's two things he said. One is he does like Peter Jurassic. He loves Mullary. He thinks he's the best character there, and he's not wrong. He's really, really top notch. And I said the good thing about it is that character there is still the same character as he is in five seasons time. He's still the same actor. The same voice is still there. He doesn't change the voice. He's consistent all the way through. He also said, why do we not have a human ambassador? We only Sinclair does all the ambassadorship, but he's the commander. So why not have an Earth ambassador there? And then there could be the conflict between Sinclair and the ambassador as they try to do things differently and have a bit more of a dynamic there, rather than him being the guy who wants what's best for the, obviously for the station, but could conflict with what Earth wants, which he's then arguing against himself, and he doesn't really seem to work that way.
I never thought of that, but it makes sense that they don't have an ambassador because it's already a human station. And these are ambassadors to the human area, I guess. But having a human ambassador would make sense too.
Yes, because he's military, so the ambassador would be political. So you'd have that military political, wrangling going on. So, but I thought, that was a fair point.
It makes for more conflict for the commander.
Yeah.
Yes.
And less and less people to pay for being in your show.
Because at the end of the day, him and his crew are all singing on the same hymn sheet, and there's very little conflict between him and Ivanova, let's say, or him and Garibaldi. Maybe putting somebody in like that would have been a little bit more of an extra thing to write up. But anyway, that's by the by. That's what he thought.
So what do we think about this Babylon curse that Jinxo has?
Yes, we get to hear about what's happened to the previous Babylons, the Babylon stations. And he's been a part of every one of them, which must be quite it's unique in this setting. But there must be other workers. Obviously, we've worked on one and the other. I must admit, I didn't write down all of the fates, but one of them blew up, and one of them, obviously, we know
the infrastructure fell apart. One was sabotaged. One disappeared in a wrinkle in time.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked how all this reframed it instead of being cursed. As being lucky because he escaped death all four times.
That's true.
And you know what else you can't escape? You can't escape this promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
Of the myriad pop culture podcasts, there is one that blends in with them all. Flying under the radar, nagging at you at a subconscious level. Nerd Bliss. Where four hosts from the Deep South and anyone they can get to appear for store brand coffee and corn nuts talk about science fiction, pop culture, current affairs, and more. You can find us at nerdblisspodcast.com or on the ESO Network. Nerd Bliss. It's one word.
And we're back. How was that for a promo?
I don't know. I haven't heard it yet.
through the magic of editing, the listeners will know before we do.
This is true.
But with Jinxo, though, I kind of felt like I wished we'd seen him earlier. It's a thing that I've been finding with season one. They've brought in this character. It would have been nice to have met him a couple of episodes ago, seen him trying to pickpocket just to survive, introduce this idea of Deuce, give him a different name, but get it kind of going, that there's this Jinx going. We've already heard about the Babylon stations, but to find out there's somebody connected to it and all four of them, it would have been nice to just know it, just so that when he leaves and we finally find out what his name is, it would have given it just that little bit more oomph for the end of the episode. I'm finally called Thomas. I'm not Jinx anymore.
Exactly. That's the hardest thing with sci-fi shows. There's not enough foreshadowing. Introduce these guys a few episodes before, just even give them a 2-second role here and there, just so we know that they're around.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you see him locked up one day, or he's in a cell adjacent to somebody else. Or like you say, you see him in the background, he's getting nicked, and then a couple of episodes later, he's in the background again. Oh, he's out again, is he? Just little mentions of that. But I suppose it might build him up a bit too much for what's ahead. But it is quite a big thing there. It's a nice little arc that happens to him in the show, but could really, considering his history, they could have been, they could have brought him on earlier and built him up, and then off he goes to roam the galaxy seeking for the Grail.
That's right. And especially because JMS wrote 95% of the episodes, he knew what was coming. He could have put that in a little bit earlier, but
I suppose if you,
casting is not easy. And
I was just about to say, casting, they would have had to pay him more money to be in more episodes, maybe. So,
So there's that. What do we think about two casts of Minbari, religious and warrior? I thought there was three. Isn't there a thing about that?
Not yet, there isn't.
Because I believe there's a worker cast.
Yes, they've suddenly realized that the religious cast and the, what's the other cast?
Warrior?
warrior caste, yeah. So one does all the fighting on behalf of the religious, and then they suddenly realise that nobody's actually doing any of the work. So they have to quickly create another caste.
Yeah, we don't talk about them. They're just workers. So we really say there's two castes, but there's actually three. Well, we're kind of embarrassed about these guys because they're just menial guys.
That's right. I mean, they live in the South. You know what I mean? They come from a different continent. They look different.
Different accents. Different heads. They don't have the spiky helmets like the warrior caste and the smooth helmets like the religious caste.
Yeah.
We're all about triangles in this culture. We've only got 3 points. 2 points. I mean, 3 points. No. Never mind.
That would have looked a bit odd if the lens, instead of having that triangle appear in the, you know, when the shadows appear, it just would have been a line.
An L instead.
Just a line. Just the...
An upside down L or a 7 or
So we find out that it's not Kosh in the suit. It's obviously somebody impersonating the Vorlon because they want to think that they're working with the Vorlons and all that. But I love at the end where Sinclair says he actually goes up to Kosh and he says
We've confiscated the fake encounter suit. It's a pretty close match to your own, at least from the outside.
Why?
Deuce wanted the people to think that he had the Vorlons working for him. Figured it would add to his image and intimidate people.
Why?
Well, after all, no one knows exactly what you look like. That makes some people a little nervous.
Good.
Yeah, I did like that. I thought we were going to see Kosh introduce the five whys, which is a thing that we have at work. And it's a thing that you also use on your kids. If you want to find out what exactly they've done wrong, you ask the question why five times. So why did you do that? Because he was annoying me. Well, why? Well, because I was annoying him. Why? I was playing with one of his toys. Why? Because he has more toys than me. And suddenly we get to the actual problem, you know. And we apply that in work. Why is this broken? Or why doesn't this work? Or why did a person do that? I thought Kosh was going to do the same thing. Why?
That'll be in the reboot. That's why it's called Babylon 5. It's not that there's four previous stations. It's the five times you have to say why. Mm. And that when he finally says why for the fifth time in the show, that's when everything starts getting revealed. But I did wonder if we were going to get another Death Walker ending that he then turns around. But because the Grail is about, you know, immortality and rejuvenation and things, whether Kosh would have actually ended up killing Thomas. Even though he's afraid of him doing that the whole episode, actually Kosh just says, look, it's not for you, and he kills him. And like Thomas just, that's it. His Jinxo's gone.
if Kosh had sort of like, his encounter suit had opened slightly one side and his hand came out with the Grail saying, it's not for you. kills him. Yeah.
And now Kosh has a French accent as well. There we go. It's very nice, you English canigots.
Yeah. Kosh, do you know where the Grail is? No, your mother smells of elderberries.
There we go. There we go. Sorry.
Release the rabbit. So anyway, let's move on to some trivia here. The tentacle used to memory wipe people was reused, wait for it, in the first season of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, since both shows have the same makeup company.
That makes sense.
See, don't throw anything away. It always comes in handy.
Very true.
Gaich was actually the name of Mia Furlan's husband. Characters in the opening scene pronounce the name of the transport ship as Von Braun, to rhyme with drawn, rather than Von Braun, that would rhyme with down, which it should be. It should be because Werner Von Braun, I think, was the one of the rocket scientists, I believe.
He invented the V2 or something.
Yes, that's right. Hmm. Given this show is set in the 23rd century, pronunciation, I can't even say the word, standards may have changed by then, so you never know. So, Sean, Star Trek connections, apart from the obvious.
Right. I do have a few. David Warner has been in Star Trek before. He played Gal Massett in Chain of Command. He played John Talbot in Star Trek V, and he played Chancellor Gorkon in Star Trek VI. Now, your good buddy Jim Norton, who played Ombudsman Wellington, he was in Star Trek The Next Generation as Holodeck Einstein.
Yeah.
Bill Blair, an uncredited alien has the most Star Trek connections. He was in Star Trek New Voyages, which is some kind of web series. He played 6 of 9 in Borg Invasion 4D, when I believe it was in the Hilton at Las Vegas. He was in 2 episodes of Star Trek Voyager, Critical Care and Friendship 1. And he was in the Deep Space Nine episode Tribunal.
Well, I didn't pick that up. So there you go.
Well, that's what I'm here for. That's why you pay me the big bucks. Army, the Gold Press Latinum, the plot loops, the Federation credits.
Yeah. Or mugs.
that too.
Pay you in ceramics.
I'd prefer self-stealing stem bolts, but that's okay.
Okay, so ratings. IMDb has this at 6.6 on their scale, which is out of 10, which basically is equivalent to a 3.3 on our scale, which is quite low for IMDb. Sean, what do you think of this episode?
I was thinking I would give this around a 3.5 or higher. I'm thinking about a 3.75. It's a good 7.5 episode. It's entertaining. It had that alien scene. It's got a powerhouse actor in David Warner. It's got comedy. It's got a little bit of everything. The CGI alien didn't have the same color as the what you call it, tentacle. Mm-hmm. And when it was bloody and damaged on the floor, it was a different color again. So that kind of brings it down. But hey, they don't have much of a budget, so we'll give them a pass. So I'm thinking 3.75. It was entertaining. I liked it. And I remembered most.
Dan?
Yeah, it's sort of a middle-of-the-road episode for me. It's more than just your average, so it's not your 2.5s. I came in at a 3 with the ratings, and as we've sort of discussed it, there is some good comedy beats. There's some really nice character work. You've got the Malari scene. You've got the Jim Norton judge scene, which makes me laugh every time I had to rewatch it, every time I was doing the notes, even though I knew it was coming up. The minute the alien just puts the drawing up, it made me chuckle. And, of course, it does have There's No Boom Today.
Yes, this episode and the next one we'll be covering because, of course, maybe our listeners don't know this, but we record back-to-back 2 episodes every week. So
Don't tell them. Surprise. Breaking the fourth wall.
A little bit behind the scenes, but yeah, No Boom Today, and then another line from the next one. So very good. I laughed.
Yeah. I'd forgotten it was this episode that it was in, because it's. I was trying to remember why she says it and what generates that boom. And as soon as it came up, I thought, oh, it's the boom. It's the boom. Sooner or later, boom. So yeah.
So for that, I'm going to give it just a little bit more and 3.5.
Okie dokie. So I am going slightly higher. No, I'll stick with the 3.5. As Dan says, it's sort of your average episode. It is an episode of Babylon 5. It's neither bad, or very, very good. So it's an average one, 2.5, right in the middle of our 5-star ratings. However, this has that little edge, that David Warner, the boom, No Boom Today, as Dan says. So exactly agreeing with what Dan's saying, basically. It was enjoyable. I enjoyed watching it. I had a good time watching it. It's nothing spectacular. It doesn't progress much in the, anything, really. There's a little sort of Delenn line that says to Sinclair, are you talking about yourself or about somebody else, when he says about progressing, et cetera, et cetera. So, that's the only bit. There's a little reminder about, things to come. So yeah, 3.5, sort of nice little episode this.
Yeah, it was good. And one of the best lines of the show was when Aldous said, "We're all looking for a reason for everything."
Yes. Yeah.
It just kind of called to me. I had to write it down.
It was a good one.
So that's the end of this episode. Join us again next week when we will be discussing season 1, episode 15. Eyes.
No boom.
No boom.
No boom today. Boom tomorrow. There's always a boom tomorrow.
What? Look, somebody's got to have some damn perspective around here.
Boom. Sooner or later. Boom!
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
End.
Lights and good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.